The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Thursday, October 30th. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today. Today we're going to be talking NGOs, right? We'll be talking about how they just seem eerily quiet, right? I had a show about it yesterday and I got tons of emails and texts yesterday saying this needs to continue. So I will continue, but before that, we have members from the LJM, which is the Maritime Academy in back of the fish fry. I have Dr. Wiefelsmuth. I believe he's German, so I'm going to make sure I pronounce like a letter pronounce his name. Let me try it again.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. I am German. Yeah, right? Put the mic directly in front of you. Who is here to give us more information about the LJM? Right, about some of the activities, because they're having a gala ball soon, Dr. Brenda May Claire Gala Ball. So everything is working towards that, but they have a series of events that is happening this and next month, and I want to get a brief synopsis of that. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Dr. Wiefelsmuth.
Yes.
And I want you to give me a narrative of what is the LJM.
Yes, good morning. My name is Dr. Richard Wiefelsmuth, and many call me Dr. Richard because of that complicated German name. But you did really well. Thanks for having us here this morning. The LJM Maritime Academy was conceived around 16 years ago. Let's say 14 years ago, and started constructing on Maritime Quay, just off Arawa Quay, and started to take its first cohort of maritime students in 2014. So that's 10 years ago. Last year, we celebrated 10 years anniversary. The school is basically set up to train young Bahamians, women and men, to become maritimers of the ship or engineers in the bottom of the ship. They are training in accordance with the international standards and the certificates that our cadets will leave us with. The diploma will allow them to enter the maritime industry worldwide. So they have a same standard as students in Canada, as students in Germany, as students in China. The world standard is we deliver in the Bahamas. So since the first cohort, many hundreds of students have actually been graduated. Many of them work in the maritime industries today, several on cruise ships, several in other boats, and basically globally. We have local sponsors, the Campbell Shipping Corporation, for example. We have sponsors from the visiting cruise ship companies here in the Bahamas, and we thrive that all of our cadets actually find gainful employment in that international industry.
Okay, good. I see you brought a cadet with you. This is Trevor Butterfield?
Cadet Trevor Butterfield. He's a deck officer. He's a sophomore. He entered his second year of training at the school this fall. And maybe you can talk about himself a little bit.
Yes. Cadet Butterfield, I want you to explain what is a cadet, by the way, and what is your position there, why you entered the industry. Dr. Richard mentioned that this is your second year. Explain what you mean by second and third year. So give us a synopsis of you and your journey, and then we'll go and highlight all of the events that is happening at the LJM. Go ahead.
Okay. To be a cadet, when it comes down to being into the maritime industry, you would have to start off as a cadet before you go onto the ship. And last year, I was a freshman at the LJM Maritime Academy.
How many years do you spend there?
I've spent 2 years.
I mean, how many should you spend there?
You have to spend 2 years there in training, and then you have to spend 1 year out to sea as an internship, as a cadet. So that's what it really trained you for. And our school provides many different opportunities for us, whether it's scholarships and different even experiences when it comes down to even going on cruise ships as well. So you can see the different industries and what it has to offer.
Okay, so you spent, this is your second year now.
Yes, sir.
So next year, what will you be doing?
Next year, what I'll be doing, I'll be out to sea, sir.
Out to sea?
I'll be out to sea during my internship.
For the entire year?
No. See, when it comes down to being a cadet, it's different tours. Let's say they'll give me a contract like this. I might be out to sea for 4 months straight. They might give me a 2 month break. And then I finish the rest of the sea time just like that. This is how the different tours go. Or some people are so fortunate to go 12 months straight out to sea like that. But some people can't imagine doing that because it gives you a lot of time for family and like.
Yeah, and family oriented. So let's go back to Dr. Richard. You're having a big gala. What is this big gala you have?
So going a little bit back to history, the founding and inaugural president of the LGA Maritime Academy was Dr. Brenda McClare. She's a well-known educator. She worked at the Bahamas University. She held math classes all around. And she was the one who actually took the opportunity to become the inaugural president to build that school to what it is today, put it really on the map of the maritime industry. And Dr. Brenda McClare retired this year. She retired at the end of June. And that's why I am now president. I worked with her for several months before that switch over. And the board of directors has decided to honor the legacy of Dr. Brenda McClare by several events this year. The gala on the 7th of November at the Bahamar Convention Center will be the climax of several activities. We held a church service in her honor last Sunday. Give back to the community in a beach cleanup on the 1st of November, Saturday morning.
Okay, so November 1st, you have a cleanup?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to clean up Arawak Cay on the east side together with the Arawak Port Development Corporation, who's also a sponsor of the Academy and the Gala, Admiral sponsor indeed. And we'll be having about 100 people there collecting garbage that kind of seems to accumulate magically in this corner. And we will be supported by the staff from the ADP. Our staff will be there, board members will come out, and parents of the cadets maybe too. I guess about 100 people will clean up, and we'll have probably a dozen, maybe 20 garbage bags filled at the end. So that's just a sign to demonstrate also that Dr. Claire was not only an academic and a president and a teacher, she was also a strong community builder and also service-oriented. So that's kind of symbolizes that activity.
Okay, tell us about the gala itself. What is the price for the ticket?
The price for gala ticket is $250 each. That's a seated dinner, including that, plus entertainment, plus various opportunities to win a prize in a raffle or in an auction, silent auction. So,
and where do I purchase the $250 ticket?
You can go to our website, ljmma.edu.bs. And you'll find a tab on the very top corner, right corner, it says Gala Tickets. And that will guide you right through to the ticket sales, online sales platform.
And where is the gala taking place?
At the Bahamar Convention Center, Grand Ballroom.
Okay, yeah. And which date is this again? Because I wrote down November 1st for the cleanup. I didn't write down the date for the gala. Forgive
the
me.
The date for the gala is the 7th of November. It's a Friday coming up next week. And there's one event still planned before that. It's the renaming of our simulator building. That's a large building which hosts the maritime simulators that allow cadets to train as close to reality in simulation. We have a bridge simulator, engine simulators. That whole building will be renamed to become the Dr. Brenda McClare Simulator
nice.
Building. That's
Good
happening on the 5th of November. That's the preceding Wednesday.
So on the 5th of November, you have the renaming of the simulator
thing. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, and that's going to be named after Dr. Brenda McClare.
That's correct.
And on November 7th is the big gala.
Yes.
And the big gala is going to be at Bahama, you said.
That's right.
Okay, go ahead.
And one of the key features of this gala, the LGM has held these galas before. There were conferences, maritime conferences held, and galas after that every second year. This year will be the inaugural fundraising gala where we will launch the Dr. Brenda McClare Maritime Bachelor Scholarship Fund. That fund is designed to support students to carry on their education after sea time, after diplomas, to achieve a bachelor degree, which will open doors to higher career path in the maritime industry.
Now, I was going to talk more about Gallup, but you opened a whole can of worms there with this scholarship and follow. What do you mean by that exactly? You get the money and Bahamians get an opportunity to do what again?
To study higher maritime sciences.
Like where?
In our school.
Okay, present at the school. Okay.
Yes, we will launch this the bachelor program next fall in September.
Oh, you're launching a bachelor's degree. I understand.
That's right.
Okay,
yes.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Finish. Sorry.
Yeah, that's exactly the story. So a bachelor degree both in engineering and in nautical sciences. Mm-hmm. And that's where cadets learn more than the basic training they achieve in this first diploma segment of the education. And so management experience, maritime shipping knowledge, maritime law, getting a little bit more knowledge about the industry as such. And that allows them to excel also to higher officer ranks on ships, but also in ports, on land-based power stations, etc.
And before you leave, how does one join or be a part of the LJM to become a member?
To become a cadet, to enroll?
Yes, to enroll.
So maybe two things to be mentioned here. One is the cadet program, Mr. Butterfield described in detail. The other one is to become a rating student. A rating student will give you a 4 months exposure to maritime training, safety training, and either some specific deck engineering or engineering knowledge, which will allow you to obtain a ticket at a rather in a short time to already join the industry as a rating. So those people will be deckhands or will be able-bodied seamen in the end. That's a career path. So it's a more hands-on practice. So for both trains, the cadet train and the rating train, you have to just fill in an application. You'll find that on our website, ljmma.edu.bs. And then we will go through a interview process. Each cadet who applies will be interviewed by a panel from our school. I'm involved, the dean is involved, the registrar is involved, and some of the instructors are involved to select the best of the best to join us. We have had a fantastic increase in intake this year. We brought on board 60 new cadets this year and 15 new ratings in September. So the school is really bustling with energy right now.
Nice, nice.
And we hope that all these people will have a wonderful future life in the maritime industry.
And just for listening audience to understand and appreciate the opportunities, mm-hmm. can you give an example so where cadets have sailed or get jobs, just generally, like, so we have one cadet being here, whatever it is.
Yeah, we're all very, very proud today because there was a Twitter tweet on that social media platform about a cadet that graduated in our first cohort in 2016-17. Mm-hmm. She is now the second officer on one of the largest cruise ships in port, and she docked the ship by herself.
Nice.
So she was celebrated by us right now. So that's one career path. Others have gone into merchant shipping. Some of our cadets are now working for the Bahamas Power and Light mm-hmm. Corporation. So there's a diverse range, and they're basically all over the world. We haven't had a good angle yet on our alumni building and keeping track where they all are. They come back at times, surprising us, and so that's one of my tasks, is to work together with the registrar to build a strong connection to them all. It's, after all, a small industry. It becomes a family in the end, and many of our graduates come back in the off times to volunteer at our school, doing certain administrative tasks, etc., or helping the students of today.
And Cadet Butterfield, before we go, what is your ambition? Where you plan to go next, to do next? I know you're in your second year. That means you're going to go with a stint on the sea. But after that?
After that, see, I see myself doing sea time as well. But I always said to myself, I don't see myself living out to sea for many years because I want to come back home to give back. Mm-hmm. See, I see myself building my company in the Bahamas, in maritime as well, and even making opportunities for students like myself to gain the knowledge to push further as well, too.
Okay. I appreciate that. And thanks for coming back. We always need Bahamians to come back. So many people say they're going abroad and they're never coming back.
Ever.
So, Dr. Richard, as we go, and we can soon hear the music start playing, I want you to give a synopsis of what all are we celebrating. The LJM will be celebrated in November. What all are the plans? So go ahead and remind us about that again and the dates.
So we passed a church service last Sunday. We are going to clean up Arawak Cay on the Saturday morning, the 1st of November. We're going to rename the simulator building on the 5th of November in honor of Dr. Brenda McClaire, and we're going to celebrate her legacy at the gala on the 7th of November, Bahamar, launching the scholarship fund. If I still have time, I'd like to say scholarships are very important to us. We have great support from shipping industries. We have great support from the TK Foundation. We have great support from the Bahamian government to designate the school to be the National Maritime Training School for the Bahamas. And that's important for applicants to know. If they're qualified through academic grades and performance, they will be most likely able to get a scholarship. And also the last point, maybe the it's an equal opportunity for both female and male cadets. Our female cadet intake is about a third now of the whole. That's growing. That's very good. And we have a special scholarship funded by TK Foundation specifically for female cadets from the Family Islands. And we have interviewed a few of those that we have actually enrolled and looking forward to them actually becoming trailblazers like Dr. Claire, nice. Perhaps in their own industry.
Nice. Yeah. I was talking to Cadet Trevor Butterfield and, of course, the president of the LJM, who's talking about their big ball for the Dr. Brenda May Claire, what's happening on, November 5th, Friday?
7th.
November 7th. Friday, right at the Bahama. The tickets are $250. Yep. You can get your tickets online at the, give me the website again.
LJMMA.edu.bs.
It's going to be a big event and all kind of prizes and surprises will be given out. Of course, they have music and entertainment there. So I'm excited about that. Thank you very much. Let me see if I can pronounce his name again. Dr. Richard V. Velsput.
Practice makes perfect.
Practice makes perfect, right? Practice makes perfect. We're going to transition now as we take our break. We're going to be talking about NGOs in the Bahamas and some of the concerns they have, some of the successes they have, what is happening, why they seem so quiet of late. So we're going to have a conversation about that. I would thank you very much, Dr. Richard, right? President of the LJM. And also, good luck again, Cadet Trevor Butterfield. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. We'll be right back.
Thanks for having us.
Call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Don't wait for a storm to arrive. Stock up on hurricane supplies, make home repairs, purchase a generator, and more this hurricane season with a Fidelity personal loan. Make that move today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app. Nassau.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. We're going to continue our conversation that we started yesterday. We're going to talk about NGOs. I've had like numerous phone calls, numerous texts yesterday when I started the conversation of why are they quiet? And I want to interrogate that. I want to continue the conversation. I want to have a conversation about their concerns. So this is a time when NGOs need to start texting in so I can read what their concerns are. This is a time when NGOs need to call in to participate in this conversation. I heard there was a number of frustration, right? I do not know why. The callers yesterday mentioned that perhaps the exchange that our leaders in Parliament had with a number of NGOs that have made them timid. I was told that one or two NGOs has left the country. They say, man, the innuendos that they suffered, they don't appreciate, right? But I'm saying, okay, that's the foreign NGOs, because there's such a thing as a foreign NGOs and a grassroot NGOs, right? And then there's established NGOs, meaning that they get sponsorship, right? As they register as NGOs from international organizations, meaning that they have a further reach to impact Bahamians who are in need. And then there are NGOs who say, man, we have registered, we have acquired all of the prerequisite that is needed to be a NGO, recognized NGO. But when we apply to get grants, I think that's the right word, when we apply to get grants locally, and when we apply to get grants abroad, there seems to be gatekeepers. Gatekeepers who say, man, this money, this grant, this new industry, I call it an industry loosely because it's for helping people, but for this conversation, this new industry is for us, and we are not including any newcomers to participate, right? And they're saying that when the government set money aside, right, to have NGOs distribute help, right, into the community, when they put that millions of dollars after COVID, that money could have assisted grassroots NGOs to grow, to develop, to establish themselves permanently, that they can organize themselves better. But some people say, man, that money went there and it stayed to the top and it did not trickle down. So their NGOs, Bahamian grassroots NGOs, are still floundering because nobody is considering them, right? There are a number of small NGOs, so they're writing internationally, but when the international boards are asking questions about the NGOs, the gatekeepers come and say, no. This money got to stay amongst us. There are a number of NGOs here that is the international people. They were able to matriculate to the Bahamas, emigrate to the Bahamas, right? Open up their NGOs, right? Receiving some nice salaries, because NGOs apparently, the president of the board them is make money as they give back to the community, right? And there are a number of small NGOs say, man, we are not getting access to none of that. And that dispensation of the new Bahamas needs to change to make sure include us at the helm. I have a text here that says, good day, NGOs not going to put their heads up if they are going to be accused of stealing monies by the government. And that narrative I heard yesterday. And apparently there's an NGO group. A WhatsApp group where NGOs communicate with each other, right? It exists in this NGO group. We want help, but we are uneasy. So I want to have that discussion on, you know, when South Africa, when they was transitioning from apartheid and they had that that conversation, right? Where people came and tell their stories and there's no judgment in order to move forward. And I'm saying, let me allow one or two NGOs to call in, to text in, to WhatsApp, to be who are out there, who are listening to say, okay, I see one or two hiccups. Let me assist on making sure that the NGO space, the persons who assist and helping the government, be partnering with the government in terms of rendering aid to Bahamians, that space becomes a safe space where there isn't any ill feelings regarding that. So I'm allowing that safe space. Is there a concern by NGOs? Is there a fear by NGOs because of what transitioned, what happened regarding the investigation? I use that word, the investigation on NGOs. Is there a concern? And why? Why is there such a, what I call, eerily quietness when hurricanes came or entered the Bahamas? It was a buzz of excitement of NGOs setting up, declaring what they can do in case there is a natural disaster. Just recently, we know we had Long Island suffered damage because of the Hurricane Category 2, Hurricane Category 1 storm. A number of shingles. I heard accidents in Mayaguana, Michael, had some roof damage, whatever it is. But once upon a time, when such happened, there was a buzz in the NGO community on, let's see on what we can do. This is beside the government, though, because, you know, the government has bureaucracy and sometimes things take a while to happen. It's not that the government doesn't want to help, you know. It's just that to jumpstart the effort. It's time because you get called so many different ministries and agencies to enact them in order to get things flowing. Whereas the NGOs say, man, we have the supplies. We are on the ground tomorrow, today, tonight. And strangely, we are seeing, if for my word now, a decline in the activities of NGOs. Now, mind you, we still have a number of NGOs working. I'm not saying that all the NGOs are gone. I'm not saying all the NGOs are not working, right? I'm saying that there is a decline. There's an obvious decline. There's an obvious silence, right? We hear that the NGOs, the feeding centers that that we do have, we hear that they are, struggling is a harsh word or not appropriate word, but they have finding it challenging at times to get people to respond to help them help Bahamians. I see I have a caller here. The phone numbers are 323-6232, 325-4314, 2259. If you're calling from the Family Islands, right? Do Grand Bahama have NGOs? If you're calling from the Grand Bahamas, it's 242-300-5720. And if you want to text, if you're one of those NGOs, people say, man, I won't get victimized by the government. But I want text, right, to explain my story, to explain my, to tell my story, to tell my concern. You can text. And the text line is 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Let me go to the first caller here. Guardian Radio AM. We talk about NGOs, you know. I say they're quiet. I want to know why they're quiet. I want to hear the stories. I want them to breathe out and say, man, this is our concerns, man. And hopefully the powers that be who are listening say, hey, I can fix that. That's small things, man. I can fix that. Go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio AM.
Yeah, Nui, how you doing? Jeff Johnson, critical thinker.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, Nui, the first thing that happens is that, you know, we have a way of redefining what words mean in the Bahamas. You know, like we say, spinning. You know, what people call a casino, we call them lottery. We call them entrepreneurs when they actually mean business. But, you know, we call it innovation when it's actually copying and so many other different things. And so it's hard for us to determine what is what by an international standard. And so typically when you spoke about an NGO and non-governmental agency, basically they are independent and mostly non-profit entities. Basically, the word, the explanation is within itself, non-governmental organization, meaning it's not run by government, nor necessarily depends on government. They can receive funding, but they actually operate from an international, regional, and local aspect that they provide their service and support. Many of the NGOs seem to have isolated themselves to this cave where you have an expanding group of people who actually start NGOs as businesses representing that what they do, you know, so they just collect stuff and redistribute it and they call themselves an NGO and pay themselves to do it, not in the truth that you need to do, what is it, why you're doing it, how you're doing it. As an individual that hopefully in the next couple of weeks will be actually looking to fund these NGOs, not from a local aspect where you have 10 people asking Atlantis, 50 people asking Bahama, everybody line up at the CFAO, all begging for the same small piece of pie for which they have a limited resources to provide. And that's because we haven't defined it. But some of them, you know, like you have these non-profit, then you have the not-for-profit, and you need to be able to define where they are. I mean, for me in the Bahamas, I see churches are almost like for not-for-profit organization as opposed to non-profit. And the reason the difference is the same between the two is non-profit serves the public good, the, you know, a broader community, whereas a not-for-profit serves the interests of its members rather than the general public. And so can you define what is what? Probably not. And so when we start to want to regulate these international organizations, you have to understand who they are, what they are, and use the same rules from which the area they want to come. They use from the United States as an example. You have many organizations who declare themselves nonprofit or NGOs, and many of them, don't have the certifications that required by IRS or the revenue or whatever to determine that they are these legitimate organization or registered organization, not necessarily illegitimate, registered organization that meet certain standards for the definition. And so I understand the concern of the Bahamas government, but then you're trying to say you cannot manage what you cannot measure. So how do you regulate something that you yourself have not been able to purely define what it is and what is the rules for the ecosystem for which you want these individuals to develop in? So until we can do that, we will simply just MSU, make stuff up. I want to use another word, but Berkeley won't let me, in regards to that. But there are some good organizations in the country, even if they're improperly formed, that it's doing good. Our economy continues to shrink. We have to now look for them to be able to define who they are, to be able to say, just as an example, you start the Newry Beach Project, right? The keep and maintain that beach public. Or is it private? I mean, public, for public good. And if you can't, you know, convince 1,000 people that you have such a good idea, plan, and it serves the public good to give you $1,000, even over a one-year period, $100 a month, then you really don't have anything but an idea.
Mm.
And that's the problem. And so, you know, just think about it, Nuri, when you do the beach, just put me on your board so we could have 1,000, 2,000, or these 11 million people who believe that that beach should be open, and they just give $100 or $50 or $25. And you see how easy you could easily get a few million dollars a year to keep your beach public and acquiring all those things. But you have to define your purpose. Proper prior preparation prevents piss poor performances.
Okay.
The broader conversation. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that, and appreciate your contribution, and I hope the people are listening. During the Dorian hurricane, the devastation, the post-Dorian, there were a number of NGOs that entered the Bahamas, right? They went into Abaco, and the government put some regulations in place, some restrictions, I think. And again, a number of NGOs got offended. Said, man, we're trying to help you all. And then you're saying that I ain't got to pay taxes on this. I'm saying that I can't import all of these things. Oh, I got to go to these various agencies, government agencies. Why can't I bring in the stuff and give it to who I want to give it? And of course, the government explained a regulation to protect the Bahamas, but a number of NGOs got offended. A number of NGOs got offended and said, man, the hell with you all. I ain't helping the Bahamas no more. Right. But when the government gave explanation on why they're doing it, because a number of abuses was happening, right? Some of the stuff is going to the wrong set of people. And I want to know whether is that one of the reasons why the NGOs are quiet? They still feel slighted from what happened during Dorian. So I want to have that conversation. I have a text says, why would anyone want to help the government out when they will vilify them and potentially arrest them and accuse them of criminal activities? That was the worst. Where am I again? That was the worst mistake the government could have ever made, was to accuse them of crimes without the support to back it up. Now those the Bohemian people ever again. And I'm hearing that narrative, right? I'm hearing a number of lay people, not necessarily the NGOs itself, right, who are concerned that, man, my NGO friends who normally bring stuff have moved on. They are not for the Bahamas at all. I know personally of an internet Canadian man, white Canadian man, who had an NGO in the Bahamas. They were active. He had a lot of Bahamian staff, but he was detained. He's a foreigner. He's an expat. He had a second home here, right? He did some charity work here, and he said never in his life he ever been questioned by police, right, for charity work, what he's doing for people, right? And he left. I mean, whatever happened during the interrogation or whatever is, he left, he closed down all his agency, lay off all his staff, and said, man, I ain't for this, right? And I want to know if the government needs to address this now cavern, this disconnect, or will we continue to ignore that there is a problem or there may be a disconnect? And if a disaster happens, right, will the government, who, like I said, bureaucracy happens, and say, well, we got to wait, right? The NGOs have to respond first. And then when the government is able to jumpstart all of its various agencies, it will happen. Or will that time the wound, or the possibility suggesting the wound that has happened, the scar that has happened, will heal? And so because it has healed, the NGOs will come and say, man, no. We then move on. So this is just a quiet period. Personally, I was concerned when the storm was coming and said, Lord, all of the NGO networks I would have volunteered with, I would have donated to, seem to be non-existent anymore. There was a Facebook group by itself. I think they eventually formed themselves into an NGO proper, a non-government organization where they give back and assist. They normally were on the ground first. Then the government comes secondary, right? People helping people. It's a people-to-people type entity, right? And that group does not no longer exist, right? I mean, they're every walks of life of Bohemians was in that social media group, giving back, employing their skills and their organizational skills to help other Bohemians. And I am not sure if the Bahamas is in the right space, clear mind, to, if there's a natural disaster, we're still in the hurricane period, right, that we can jumpstart and employ the expertise of these people, because the people don't seem to move on. They won't do NGO work no more. So it looks like we would be foreign help to save us, right? I'm a little concerned. However, this text says, CA, if a white prominent businesswoman can be arrested, who has the means, imagine what the powers that be could do to a black NGO. I see they're bringing race into that. Says, revised if a prominent, they sent it back again because they're sorting them. Says, if a prominent white businesswoman with resources can be arrested, imagine what those in power could do to a black-led NGO. I will ask a question. Is there such a thing as a black NGO and a white NGO? Or this, charity group? Or just NGOs and just happen to have a number of white people, or happen to have a number of black people? Is there such a thing as a grassroots NGO and an upper class NGO? Are they the same, right? Are they helping Bohemians in general, right? Or there's a distinct difference between the two, where someone would have access and the other will not have access. We need to have that conversation too, moving forward, in terms of access and allowing allowing people to voice their concern on what exactly is it, right? I see that Jamaica, right? The government has released a number of regulations in terms of what all can you, as a group coming into Jamaica. Like, let me read the headline. It says, Jamaica immigration procedure for admission of disaster relief / rescue personnel. So they had the same, or they are having the same issue that we had in Abaco. Influx of people from around the world coming in, and they do not know who is coming into the country, what they're doing and what they're bringing. And of course, they want to be unprohibited in terms of what they do, right? Free range to just enter the country and say they're helping. And I see, similar to what the Bahamas did during Dorian, Jamaica has implemented Jamaica immigration procedure for admissions for disaster relief and rescue personnel. They said all of the donations need to be coordinated with government. I know that was a big thing when the last, if you can bring things in the Bahamas, you need to come through the government. You ain't letting you just go and drop it off. And Jamaica's saying the same thing. Say, coordination with the ODPEM and the MFAFT. It said, all donors and agencies are encouraged to coordinate with the Office of Disaster Preparedness and Emergency Management and Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Foreign Trade to ensure purpose of the visit is declared and relevant protocols followed prior to arrival. This caused a major chaos inside the Bahamas. When I say chaos, people got vexed. They're all kind of international talk about the prime minister at the time is blocking aid and assistance. But we see that other countries are adopting the same procedures and policies. Says all donor agencies must provide the following details to the PICA. This is from Jamaica Immigration Procedures for the Admissions of Disaster Relief / Rescue Personnel, right? It said air and sea. You got to apply, basically, to bring in the aid. Expected date and time of port of arrival. And Abaco, people just landing their planes, right? They ain't ask nobody. They just landing their planes, say they helping. Say donor organization name and contact details. You got to be registered. You got to be registered NGO to assist. Again, that all that caused issues with the Bahamas. A lot of people complain and critique and criticize the government when they mention all this. List of all passengers and crew. The list must include information such as name, nationality, passport number, flight details, and purpose of visit. Passport bio data page must be sent to an email listed below. The Immigration Customs C5 form form must be completed prior to arrival. And of course, they give all the links to Jamaican agencies, right? And I remember this conversation during Dorian and the NGOs who came in and they said that they didn't bring no ID. They are NGOs not registered. They just want to help. They want to donate things. And so it's interesting to see that the Jamaican government has also adopted the stance of the Bahamian government at that time, right? And saying there needs to be things to be done prior to entering the Bahamas. This text says, there's always the Bahamas Red Cross. And of course, that's a premier NGO in terms of responding to disasters, right? We know that they are one of the first people to respond. I think they're on a government board. Like, I think they're government sponsored, they're internationally sponsored, the Bahamas Red Cross, right? Most people would say, if you're not sure about the NGO that you're donating to, you can always trust the Bahamas Red Cross, right? You can send information and donations directly to them, right? But we've seen, especially in Dorian, right, that the Bahamas Red Cross was seemingly overwhelmed. The government was seemingly overwhelmed, right? They were helping everybody, right? And when the government, especially how large the disaster was, say, you know, that Abaco was flattened, Grand Bahama was challenged, right? When the resources seem to be overwhelmed, even though they have perhaps the best organizational methods, right? Like, again, the example of the Red Cross, is there space? Is there space for private NGOs to be enacted, right? Should the government help to establish smaller NGOs in terms of giving them smaller contracts, like similar to what happened after COVID? Some of the NGOs was employed, right, to it, and it made them establish. They now had the resources to buy equipment, to get the training, to pay lay staff, right? Because they got the opportunity from this grant that the government did. And then a number of people said, man, we are ready to go. But the grant monies was not given them access to. So they still remain small. They still weren't able to organize themselves. And we need to have a conversation that whose duty, does the government have a duty of care to small NGOs, to assist small NGOs? We know that I think this administration gave money to the singing bishop to help him with his organization, his NGO, right, to jump supplies. We know that the feed network is supported by the government. They get a grant there in order to continue their efforts. We know the feeding place on, the name escapes me, on Wolf Road, on Wolf Road, tends to get support by the government so that they're able to organize themselves. And there are a number of people saying, man, if the government just supports us, our NGO will move to the next level. I see I have a phone call, Kermit, patch that phone call through. Go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio AM. You're live. I'm doing well. You talk up a little more. I can't hear you much, but I'm listening.
No, CA.
Good afternoon.
Yes, I'm listening to your call. I'm an NGO leader, and it's with great interest. And I think it was very sad listening to the two most recent text messages, because it truly defines where we are right now. You know, everybody needs money, even talking about a referencing a little. So the NGO that was there, I speak for the white ones, they the grocery stand. Okay, services by women. The administration never would be long. A lot of us keep good records. My organization, we have financial statements. We're audited as well. And so we do what is necessary in the public's eyes, in the eyes of the people that we serve, that we do right by them and do due diligence.
Okay. And that's a fitting ending. And I truly hate what you said. I was reminded that there are billions of available for beaming nonprofit NGOs. They just need guidance on where to apply beyond our borders. I know there's civil society, and civil society tends to render assistance to their membership. Perhaps we need to have more conversations. Perhaps some of the NGOs are not aware that these entities, these local guidance forces exist. So perhaps I need to have a conversation with that they can come on and explain to NGOs about what can be done, how to expand their resources and their access. This has been Guardian Radio AM with CA Nery. Have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9, guardiantalkradio.com and Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.